Our reading this morning is from Reverend Dr. Bill Schultz. Bill has been a personal mentor for me. He was also president of the UUA. He's been president of the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, as well as president of Amnesty International. So he's somebody I listen to. this speech, I think, really speaks to the idea of why, particularly at this time of the year and with the world as it is at this particular moment, church is a necessary institution. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know about you, but I do not like head cheese. You know what head cheese is, don't you? The delicatessen meat consisting of pig's tongue, pig's snout, pig's hair, pig's feet, all suspiciously encased in aspic. Now, I like almost all food. Indeed, what Cardinal John Patrick Foley's mother said of him might well be said of me. Cardinal Foley grew up in Connecticut, but he was for many years the chief spokesperson for the Vatican and a connoisseur of Italian food. And when he returned to the United States after several years in Rome, his mother took one look at him and said, "John, there are 20 pounds of you there that were not ordained." So I like all food, but I find head cheese disgusting, abnormal, unnatural. And then there is one more thing that is unnatural: loving our neighbors as ourselves. In fact, many biologists would say that loving our neighbor as much as we love ourselves and our own families is evolutionarily suicidal, a surefire way to destroy our own gene pool. The only way our selfish genes can survive is by putting our own interests first. And yet somehow we know that's not good enough, that ignoring the needs of other people leads straight to war, recession, ecological disaster. Somehow this large brain of ours has figured out that our own interests are intimately linked with those of others. But acting on that knowledge just won't come naturally. It's not natural. With all the other distractions in our lives, with all our worries about our own health, our kids' happiness, our own bills to pay, it doesn't come naturally or easily to care whether Rita Ngozi has enough sweet potato vines, cassava cuttings, and a beehive so that she can feed her family and sell her honey. Rita is in Kenya, for God's sake. That's more than 7,000 miles away. It doesn't come naturally. It doesn't come naturally to think about Leroy and Andral in Haiti, who lost their family homes in Port-au-Prince in the earthquake and are now struggling to build a new life. It takes a lot of energy. A lot of energy to focus on a poultry worker in Arkansas who does a hard day's work and then is refused her pay by the poultry companies because they know that she is undocumented and therefore unlikely to go to authorities. It takes effort to remember the young American teenager in Chicago who lives in fear every day of her undocumented mother being deported. And keeping up this level of energy, of caring, of engagement with other people's needs when we go home would be the most unnatural thing of all. So instead of just feeling guilty about it, what do we human beings do to counteract our basic natures? We create institutions like this one to embody our best selves, to beckon us, beg us, taunt us, and tease us into acting unnaturally, into loving our neighbors, whether they be in the house next door or a village 5,000 miles away. So those are the thoughts of Bill Schultz about this season and about what it means to be part of this community. And I want to come back to that in a minute, but I want to start because it is holiday season, and I get to reflecting back, going way back. So I want to tell you about a time a long time ago when I was yay high, and I saw a commercial on television, and it had Santa Claus in it. And I remember he said, "Ho, ho, ho, don't forget the real reason for the season." Now, this commercial was for a used car lot. So that clearly didn't have anything to do with the holidays, and so I decided that somehow Santa Claus must embody the real meaning of the season. Now, at this time, my father was working two jobs and taking night classes, and money was very tight for us. And in fact, I saw that Santa commercial on our sole television set, which was a broken color TV that my parents couldn't afford to fix. So the TV picture had been projected solely in shades of putrid green for as long as I could remember. You know, when Dorothy opened the door to Oz in the annual airing of The Wizard of Oz, I didn't know what the big deal was because Oz was just as green as Kansas had been, right? So anyway, at this time, one of my father's jobs was at a department store, and it was owned by a man named Mr. Ellis. Mr. Ellis had immigrated from Eastern Europe. He was always helping our family make ends meet, saying that he himself had been helped when he first arrived here. One of the things he would do would be to dress the mannequins in clothes in our sizes so that my dad could take them home when it was time to change the displays. So one December, my father brought home this giant blow-up plastic Santa Claus that Mr. Ellis had given him. It used to stand outside the store, 9 feet tall. Santa's head was a good 3 feet in circumference with two great staring eyes, each the size of saucers. So I was already in bed when my hardworking father came home with that deflated Santa under his arm. He and my mother huffed and puffed until they'd inflated him up to his full height. They had to bend Santa's head forward so that, you know, he was touching the ceiling like that and fit him in the corner of the living room. And then the two of them went happily off to bed. So the next morning is Saturday. And as I usually did, I got up early and went downstairs to watch cartoons in front of the television. And I'll never forget, just before that set flickered on, that green set, I caught sight in the screen of something reflected in the room behind me. So practically frozen, I forced myself to turn my head, and there just a few feet away, I see that large black buckled shoe. But when I look up and I see that bearded face with those staring saucer eyes gaping at me, let me tell you, a high-pitched shriek came out of me. I tore up the stairway into my parents' room and flung myself onto the safety of their bed. So just about, my mother told me later that right around this time she had just awakened and said to my father, "Do you suppose that Santa might scare Jason?" A shriek reverberated through the house. So I guess my lesson from that pivotal moment was one that I had a fear of Santa Claus that would then be ongoing. But the other lesson, I saw Mary Botts last night in a Santa hat from behind, and I kind of went like that. The other lesson was that Santa Claus really didn't have anything to do with the season. In fact, for me, that image of that big, overinflated, overwhelming Santa obliterating everything else has become representative of a particular malaise that I've noticed around this time of year, witnessed it in my own family. Usually starts around Thanksgiving, and we sort of peg it as this mysterious ailment. It's characterized by a variety of symptoms: irritability, fatigue, lethargy, loneliness, phantom aches, and pains. It's become so commonplace in my family that we finally named it holiday-itis. In fact, it's usual for us to call each other up this year and say, "Well, who's going to have the acute case of holiday-itis this year?" You know, it's a psychosomatic response to the stress of the season we figured out in time. There's so much we look forward to in the holidays, but there is also a huge amount of stress from the expectations that are involved. Expectations of decorating the house with those tangle-prone strings of twinkling lights. Expectations that we'll find just the right gift in crowded stores, glittering with one thing more expensive than the other. And don't get me started on the food. When you try and gather the family together, they're trying to satisfy the vegans and the carnivores and an 8-year-old boy who will only eat processed chicken pieces that are shaped like dinosaurs. Truly. Add the media pundits with their divisive talk of the war on Christmas, interactions with family members you just don't get along with, and the expectation that we're supposed to stay jolly and patient with each other, as this is supposed to be the most wonderful time of the year, even as we anxiously await the vote of the Electoral College, all set to the tune of relentlessly cheerful music. It is enough to give anyone a bad case of holiday-itis. I'm not alone on this, of course. These observations aren't revolutionary. You know, we can look to sages like Charlie Brown, who famously said, I think there must be something wrong with me, Linus. Christmas is coming, but I am not happy. I don't feel the way I'm supposed to feel. I like getting presents and sending Christmas cards and decorating trees and all that, but I'm still not happy. I always end up feeling depressed. And Andy Borowitz sums it up perhaps best when he says that Christmas is a baby shower that went totally overboard. The longest baby shower in the history of humankind. Anyway, and I don't know, you know, whether it's the divisiveness in our country at this time or all the transitions in my own life, the loss of a couple of important friendships from my life a few months ago, but I find myself not immune to holiday-itis this year. I find myself looking back to places in my life that have given the season a deeper meaning. I will share with you then kind of the bookend story to that story about the Santa Claus. A few years after that, a time when things were better for our family, we had a TV with all the colors, not just green at that point, and we were happy to share our good fortune by participating in a program at our church where we were given the name and address of the Jones family. This was a mother and two boys who couldn't afford to have much of a holiday that year. My brother and my parents and I headed to the store, eagerly loading up our shopping cart. We wrapped the gifts, we filled the trunk, and merrily headed off to deliver them. That drive across town was a long one. I watched through the car's frosty window as our familiar suburban world dissolved into urban decay, neat houses replaced by boarded-up ones. And finally, we stopped before a weather-beaten house. The door was opened by Mrs. Jones, who greeted us with a soft voice but looked us squarely in the eye. Now, I'd anticipated leaving these gifts under a tree, but there was no tree in the house, just some empty rooms, bare walls. "We used to have a piano," Mrs. Jones said apologetically, "and we knew then that if there'd been a piano, there'd been other furniture. It's been a bad year," she added. But then she looked us squarely in the eye. "But we're figuring things out." We thanked her for letting us help, and we meant it. Any misconceptions we'd had about helping an underprivileged family vanished as we stood face to face with her, saw her strength and courage, and realized that though she lived on the other side of town, the Jones family weren't very different from us. Back in our car for the trip home, I thought about whether they would have something to eat along with their presents that year. And I thought about how I hadn't known how grateful I could be to be allowed the honor, privilege of helping someone else. And I remember thinking, okay, this is what it's about. Meaning could be found in someone being brave enough to reach out for help and someone else being there. It was about all of us recognizing our common humanity and struggles, for if we had been dealt different cards, my family might have been the ones living in that run-down house. It had been just a few years before that we had been being helped out by Mr. Ellis. When the Jones children awoke on Christmas morning, they would know they mattered. And it reminded us that we mattered because we could do something to help. This wasn't some paternalistic act of charity, at least in my mind. This was living out our interconnectedness. Reverend Amy Morgenstern says, "This kind of giving shows us that we are all connected, that the barriers we erect between us are fictions, and that we must all work together toward our mutual liberation." That's empowerment, working together, whether we are the ones needing help or the ones helping others. I believe, then, that connection-making through giving is the real meaning of this holiday season. You know, and despite the way Christmas permeates American culture, as inclusive Unitarian Universalists, we also recognize the other rich winter holidays. Bodhi Day, Hanukkah, Solstice, Panchaganapati, Human Light, Kwanzaa, all of these holidays, all of them really call us to value our sacred connections with one another. They're about more than that, though. I think they call us to redemption. As Bill Schultz says, "I do believe that people of faith, of any faith, want to believe that human history has the possibility of redemption." By redemption, we're talking about deliverance from evil. But what is it that we need to be delivered from exactly? I think the big evil in today's world is found in that fear to connect with others. In the selfishness, isolation, and self-interest that permeates our culture and is perhaps humanity's greatest flaw, as Bill Schultz observed in the reading, that notion of what is natural for us or unnatural. We've heard it most recently in the political rhetoric about people of color, about immigrants, about Muslims. Redemption then comes when we step out of our current I culture and embrace a we one, reconnecting with that spirit of love that elevates us into becoming our better selves. This is the call to us as people of faith, even as we know that for Unitarian Universalists, faith constitutes a wide variety of understandings, right here in this room. For UU theologian Anthony Pinn, faith is a firm atheism that avoids talk of transcendence. From my perspective, Dr. Penn says, there is nothing behind the symbol God. In its place, I affirm the idea of community. It is in community that we are encouraged to develop our full human potential and overcome oppression. Reverend Elizabeth Ellis says, God is in the nitty-gritty work of loving one another in the social, economic, political, and material world. We are called to understand the world's systems and its evils and to establish mutual love in spite of all of our unlovability. And Reverend Kathy Huff says, the universe that I experience has no moral aspect. There's no underlying plan or message to be discerned. Giving intentionality to life is a human tendency. This reality forces me to share viscerally in the full range of the earth's joy and suffering. It requires that I work for justice and the transformation of all that would marginalize or oppress. So each of these Unitarian Universalists really understand the idea of God and faith very differently, but they nonetheless come back to the same key point of the importance of the relational work that we do, work that begins to dismantle oppressive systems and alleviate suffering. It is in this way of connecting with humanity, not in professing a particular belief about God or faith, that we Unitarian Universalists seek redemption. This idea of the holiday season as a time of redemption, this, again, it's no revolutionary idea only for the liberal person of faith. The Urban Dictionary, you've heard of that, maybe the website, and do you know how they define a CEO Christian? Anybody know? It's a Christmas and Easter only Christian. A holiday Catholic is defined as Catholics that only go to church on holidays like Christmas and Easter. They take all the good seats and overcrowd the parking lot. This, for many people at this time of year, you know, it may be the only time that they connect with a faith community, the only time that they reach out, because intuitively, I think most of us associate the power of interconnection and giving with the holidays. And yet, nonetheless, holiday-itis can and will rear its ugly head as a response to all that pressure to have the perfect holiday. All that holiday pageantry can distract us from facing what is bothering us deep down. Those human connections that aren't going right or haven't gone right in our lives, all those fractured connections to humanity out there in the wider world, ones that we are all too aware of this holiday season right here in our nation. So the holidays even among family and friends, even within this community, can be a lonely time. It means the season can be especially difficult. It's like that giant Santa Claus is always right there in our face demanding we have a happy holiday. The glitz and glare can promise us the rich colors of Oz, but so often leave us with the sickly green of Kansas as we acknowledge the broken connections in our own lives. So what do we do? What can we do to fight holiday-itis? Well, I think it starts with consciously acknowledging that this is a season for us to connect and give. It's as simple and basic as that. We begin by working to be present for our friends and family and this community right here, giving of our time and love to each other, like people gave last night to put that dinner on, all those dozens of people that came here to put that holiday dinner on. We don't lose ourselves in some Don Quixote quest for the merriest holiday possible. We don't expect anyone to be anything than what they are. I mean, in other words, if you don't get along with your mother-in-law or your brother or whoever the rest of the year, you're not going to get along with them at Christmas and Hanukkah. It's just not happening. And if you're feeling lonely or stressed by whatever challenge you might be facing at the moment, this is the time to reach out. There's something strong and courageous in reaching out when you need to. As Unitarian Universalists, we are called to think even more broadly than that, though. To recognize that we are motivated by a profound love to connect not just with our immediate communities, but the wider world. We have to save some of that energy we spend blowing up that giant Santa Claus and use it for something else, to give to others out there of our time, presence, or money while recognizing our common humanity. There is great power to heal and effect change in those loving connections. Like my family, who was working hard to get by in tough times, like Mrs. Jones, who was working to hold her family together, there are people around us who need a little extra support this time of year, who need the nourishment of spirit we provide. And today we will share in our bread communion an opportunity during this holiday season for each of us to share the diverse breads from our family and cultural tradition to nourish one another in body. But of course, this is really a metaphor for what we are asked to do in spirit, to come together, to ask of ourselves what bread we will bake for others this season. How will we nourish those in need? And yes, how will we nourish ourselves? So by all means, celebrate the season. String up colored lights, put up holiday trees, light your candles, wrap presents, indulge in festive dinners. But don't forget, it's also a time to truly give. That spirit of giving with love is the cure for holiday-itis. There is no doubt. So I'd like to leave you with a friendly warning to beware of Santa Claus. Beware of holiday-itis. But whatever you do, don't beware of love. Go out into the world. Spread it around. That's the joy of the holiday season. Not just the holiday season. It's not exclusive to it. It is available all year long. Spread it around. May it be so. So, our offering is next, but we are going to have an extended offering time. This is a time that we show our gratitude for this community. And so, of course, our offering basket will come around. But we also will make this a time for you to step forward as you choose, if you choose, to share in our bread communion. And maybe we'll pull the card out here in front a little bit. But to share in our bread communion, to take of that bread that someone else has brought here today, to recognize the gifts that we share with one another, the nourishment that we provide each other in this community, and the potential that we have to nourish the world in ways that we have not even begun to do. So I hope these next moments are a time for you to connect deeply with the spirit of this community.